The Sour Hour is meant for the serious brewer. The Sour Hour may contain some seriously funkified content. The Sour Hour is not for the faint of heart. So exercise some damn discretion, would you please? Sheesh. And now, here's the Sour Hour with Jay Goodwin.
Yeah, it's that time. It's the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network. My name is Jay Goodwin. We're here in studio ADD.
It has
in
been
downtown
named.
Concord.
Yep.
Yeah. What's the story behind that, Scott?
Well, you know, the first studio, the garage, Studio A, right? And
right.
Then there was Studio D with the bedroom, and then it was Studio Double D in Martinez.
Self-explanatory.
Right. And it took a long time to figure out what the hell to name this, and finally a listener, I think, tweeted or something, ADD, and we went, ah, that's it.
Sorry, what were you saying?
Exactly.
Awesome.
You got it.
It's great to be here in Concord. We are in the calm before the storm in the Bay Area, and this sort of pre-complaining is probably not music to everyone's ears across the country. It's like, oh, the Bay Area gets one storm every 10 years. It's like, all right, yeah, that's enough, guys. But there should be a pretty big storm coming in, so we're seeing if we can, get the show in, get a few beers in us, and then hopefully get in some shelter.
You know it's bad when you look at your weather app and the little graphic, it's the rain cloud with the little thunderbolt.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You don't see that too often here in sunny California.
No, definitely not. But we're happy to be here tonight, here with Scott, obviously, and Bevo behind the glass. I guess she was telling us before the show that the chat is down, and she looks like she's on the phone working hard to maybe do some things about that, but
I think it's her computer that's messed up and she can't access the chat. So for those of you in the chat room, if you wish to ask questions that we can see at this moment, you're going to have to call in. I think someone just did at 888-401-BEER.
Great. Yeah, we're definitely encouraging phone calls tonight. If you want to watch us, it's thebrewingnetwork.com/TV. Is that right?
Yes.
And then I really encourage you guys to go on to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and leave some feedback. You know, we want to know what you guys think of the show so far. You know, we're still in the infantile stage, so, you know, get at us now while we can still make changes and we don't get into any bad habits. But it's a special show tonight, not just because of the storm, but because we have our first official main in-studio guest, and that's Tim Clifford, the co-owner and head brewer of Sante Adarius Rustic Ales. How's it going, Tim?
It's going well, Jay. Thanks for having me out.
Oh, I'm so excited you're here, Tim. God damn.
Thank you, sir.
I've been meaning to get you in here for a long time.
Anyone who's listening knows, who's heard of Sante, knows how great your beers are. And, you know, I can honestly say this. I'm not much of a brown noser, but I think you guys might.
I'm sorry. It was funny. I wasn't. Never mind.
Okay.
You're lovely.
Tell me
I'm
more,
not
Jay.
Much of a brown noser.
Tell me
but,
more.
But, you know. Tim might be the head brewer at my favorite brewery. I love their beers that much.
They're
Everything
spectacular.
Is oh. awesome. You know, I've read somewhere where you guys do, you know, sort of like simple recipes, but that doesn't mean it's a simple. I think a lot of people's minds may conjure like boring or something like that. Your beers are very exciting. They have great balance and complexity. So I'm so happy to be talking to you about all your beers, but in particular your sour beers tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Jay, and the compliments, you know, that's very nice. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we'll get into those in a little bit. First, a little housekeeping business. Yeah, I saw that there was no session this week, Scott. What's up with that?
I don't know. We're just kind of lazy here at the BN. We work when we feel like it, you know.
No. Speak for yourself.
BN's got a full-time gig these days. We had the Doe's Christmas party, the
awesome.
Local homebrew club, one of the big ones, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know a lot of the guys wanted to go to that one. So, but, you know, three sessions a month, as per usual. We did the first session of the month was with Bike Dog Brewing Company.
Right on, Sacramento,
and,
right?
Yes, sir. And they were on the first. And then we've got the world's youngest Cicerone coming in this Monday, Angela Steele. She's from Michigan. She's coming all the way out here to join us in the studio. She's 21. She's a certified Cicerone. And then on the 22nd...
Wait, doesn't that test take like 12 months of studying, though?
Indeed it does, yeah.
There's got to be some illegal stuff going on.
Well, we'll find out what the story is without naming names of establishments, I'm sure.
Gotcha.
And then on the 22nd, we got the Christmas show, and we got Logsdon Farmhouse Ales coming in studio.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Very cool. Their beers are awesome. Quick recap of show. What show was this? 5?
Yes.
So the last one was 4.
Yes. And makes the one sense. Before that?
You know, I didn't take math at UCSB, guy. You know what this is about,
I thought you were a science-y guy.
Yeah. Okay. You know, psychology, soft science.
Ah.
Yeah. That's enough out of Bevo for the entire hour.
Turn her mic off.
Hour and a half. That's like, you know, more than I'm willing to hear from back there. But anyway, on the last show, we had actually our initial segment, we had Chris Johnson from Green Bench, who was in town.
Love that guy.
And joined us in the brewery. The studio. And afterwards, hung out, had some beers too. But I really encourage you guys to go back and check out that show. Hear Chris's thoughts on his kettle souring technique, because his beers were great. And I mentioned this on the last show, but a lot of people try kettle souring. It's a great way to separate a sour beer program from the rest of your regular fermentation. If you don't want to cross-contaminate the rest of your brewery, you can grow lacto in your kettle, kill it off, and make some sour beers out of it. But I think too high of a percentage of those beers just kind of get funky and weird. I don't know. Tim, what's been your experience tasting when someone brings you a beer and they say, hey, this is kettle soured. Like, what's been your experience with that?
Generally, I don't like them, but there's always exceptions. And I think the technique itself can be done well. And I've had those examples, but not a lot.
Right. And I don't know much about it. I've never really done it before. And I was listening to Chris talk about his technique and was really impressed with his technique and the detail and also the quality of the beer. So if you guys are interested in that, I definitely recommend going back and checking in on the last show. Our main guest on the last show was Troy Casey of Casey Brewing and Blending. He sent us some awesome beers.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
Some of the best beers I've had in a while. Really cool stuff. He's got his Saison, which is kind of like in the tart Saison style. He's got his Fruit Stand series, which he sources all local Colorado ingredients. Some really cool stuff there. And he's kind of got this old world approach to everything. So if you're interested in that, especially for homebrewers who don't have, all the same resources as a professional brewery, Troy kind of, as a professional brewer, kind of goes that old school way, so I think homebrewers can really pick up a lot from what he's doing in that episode. So it's good stuff. I definitely recommend you guys checking it out.
I wish we would have saved some of his beer, but you and me and Chris got after it after the show that night. We polished it all off.
We certainly did. Yeah, we've got a few more bottles at the Rare Barrel over in Berkeley, but who knows how long those are going to last. We're going to have our staff sort of like a bottle depletion party one of these nights. So we get brought a lot of, I don't know if that's proper grammar at all, but people bring us.
It was brought.
It was betrothed to us.
Yeah, your walk-in's looking good, man. You got a nice bottle selection going
on
there.
Lots of sour beer.
Can I get an invite, or is that staff only?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Absolutely. Tim also. We
really,
did it.
Scott?
Hell yeah. You didn't see what it looks like in there, Bevo.
Bevo, you can come. We have a fishbowl of Tums. So
that does sound delightful. Hey, I claim that.
That's not a bad beer name, actually. I kind of like it.
Trademark the Rare Barrel 2014.
It does sound like a Rare Barrel name. Who's on one?
I was just going to say, we're going to jump right into it. We have Patrick on the line from South Carolina. He has a question about brewing Saisons for you guys.
What's going on, Patrick?
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Hey. Great. What's up?
Hey, I was just wondering if you had any maybe general tips for improving Saison brewing, specifically maybe if you treat your water or, yeast we can get as a home brewer.
Okay, yeah, two totally different questions. As far as water treatment goes, I can only speak to what I do, and we don't do any treatment to our water. And it's a fact that in Capitola, we have some of the worst brewing water on paper that you could have. What I like about that, though, is that it's super minerally rich, very salty, if you will, and that tends to work very well with Saison. And from my perspective, we have a warehouse. It's a brewery. It's not a farmhouse brewery, but I'm trying to make beers like I think they might have been made in the past. And if you were a farmer, the myth and the lore is all true, and you were a farmer, you wouldn't have had access to special waters. You would have had to use whatever you have. So I'm doing the same thing stubbornly. So don't really have a lot to say there. Ours is hard and it works well. Yeast, you know, essentially we're doing a blend for our saisons of the DuPont and French saison strain. That's a good place to start.
That's fascinating that it, I mean, that's, it's unlike most of the brewers we hear on the BN that are not treating their water. And yeah, the water's not that great. I hear a lot of, well, we don't treat the water, but it's fantastic for brewing.
Yeah, no.
And we don't really need to.
No, so, I wouldn't let you drink my tap water. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
Hmm. So then are there other practices you're employing that are overcoming that then?
That's interesting. That's a good question. And it's accidental, but it all works. And so because we don't have hot water on demand, we're having to pre-boil this water the night before. And during that time, it drops a lot of those solids out. I mean, it's an impressive amount of particulate left over after this. So and then transferring that from our kettle to our essentially a holding tank for the hot water. Again, you know, there's some filtering going on there. And so... you know, I've had the water tested when we early on, but I've never had it tested after we do the boiling.
Wow.
Awesome. We actually have a Saison in front of us. It's Sante Adair's Saison Bernice. I'd call it sort of more in the tart Saison category. Tim, can you just describe a little bit about, you know, from beginning to end, like what's going on with this beer? What makes it so unique?
So we have a base beer called Anais, A-N-I. A-N-A-I-S, named after a good friend of ours' daughter. And that base beer does a lot of work for us, including making Bernice. West Ashley is made by that. Same base beer appreciation also. Anyway, Bernice is interesting in that it's done completely in stainless. And we're doing a primary fermentation in our conical and then transferring it over this wine tank that we have. And I add my bugs and wait it. 6 weeks, 5 weeks, 4 weeks, depending on how it tastes, and package it.
And what's the malt bill look like on that that base Saison that you guys
sure.
use for a lot of your beers?
Yeah. Actually, for somebody who always is touting the simplicity of my beers, that's actually one of the more complicated ones for Saison. But we're talking about roughly 75% Pilsner, 10% wheat, 5% acidulated, and then we actually use Vienna. And I would never... tell anybody to do that. So, yeah.
I don't know. That sounds like pretty tasty.
Oh, and also oats, flaked oats as well. Excuse
nice.
Me.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Well, it's making a great beer. This is, you know, it's just a great balance where you get that acidity that you want in a lot of sour beers, but it's not overwhelming. And you get yeast character. It's just a beer that is, you know, there's not a lot of bells and whistles, but a lot of the drivers of flavor come from the yeast and bacteria.
Yes.
What's the, you know, you say you put your kind of bug mix in there. What
sure.
what does that kind of look like?
I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, I've had it plated, and to my knowledge, there's at least 5 different Bretts and a couple different lactose strains, and then whatever's floating around inside the brewery, I think, it's become its own thing. But, you know, these are things that I essentially have like a sourdough starter, if you will, and I've been keeping these things going for several years, and... it works.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to talk about it as best I can, but it's kind of a mystery even to myself. I'm not exactly sure of what's in there.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to get into a lot of that, you know, how you started as a home brewer, how you developed your cultures over time, how those cultures kind of turned into, you know, your professional brewery's inoculant, and how you, you know, started up Sante. But we'll get into all that and all due time. One thing I wanted to touch on off the top is just that it's something we didn't really get to in our last show with Troy, and I know it's something he wanted to talk about, was the role oxygen plays in his brewery. You know, he says he's an old world brewer. You know, Sante, you know, you guys describe yourselves as a rustic brewery, and you know, you definitely get those flavors in those beers. You know, what does rustic mean to you, Tim, when you hear that
question? What does rustic mean to me? You know, ultimately it was a little bit of a play on words, a little bit self-deprecating. Rustic can both mean right from, you know, of the country and, mm-hmm. you know, being, but it's also you're from the country, you know, so a little bit of self-deprecation. And it was really, for me, pointing back to my homebrewing roots. you know, I really wanted to show that I understood the system that I had that would be somewhat mocked if you know, any other professional brewer to watch him walk in my brewery. And so I think I was just kind of awesome. Maybe self-conscious about it, and so picked a weird name for our brewery.
That's perfect. It stands out. The brewery is beautiful, and I encourage everyone, if they're in California, to come down and visit. We'll talk a little bit more about Tim's beers throughout the hour, but I think it might be time for a break. What do you think, Scott?
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's do it. We'll be right back. This is the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Starting a brewery is not for the faint of heart. It's definitely a labor of love. If you're not going to give it 100%, don't bother.
Brewers Publications is proud to present the Brewers Association Guide to Starting Your Own Brewery by Elysian Brewing's Dick Cantwell. Business plans, financing, sustainability, and more. This book takes you through the planning and execution needed to turn the dream of craft brewing into a reality. Whether you want to open a brew pub or a packaging brewery, learn the professional side of ingredients, wastewater, quality, and how to build the craft brewery of the future. The Brewers Association Guide to Starting Your Own Brewery, available now from Brewers Publications and brewerspublications.com.
You might want to say it.
Testing.
You got to understand. You got to
speak the truth for real.
You might want to say I'm a lot. You got to understand.
We're trying to tell you the deal from my perspective. The J5 collectible rack. Cause
you got to
keep it together and try.
You might want to say I'm a lot. But you got to understand.
We're more than meets the third eye. Words fly, ripping from my third eye view.
I ain't hating, I just heard better. Up the ante on the game and apply the pressure. Understand I was a fan before I was a member of your favorite rap band. Understand that I'm still a fan.
And you can complain after the fact, related to the game that came after crack. Cause every nigga I know is out to get a plaque. Yeah. So why you wanna go and do that, love, huh?
I don't know, man, cause we seen fiends who dream cream, ripping the quest through special effects and green screens. And it seems you either be the one that flashed that cannon or signing autographs to the last cat standing.
Brother, pass that action, the attraction is real. Your only way you're coming up is probably inking the deal. While you're thinking the skills, some are thinking the mills. And they're never in the quest to get that house on the hill.
And that's real.
You got to
speak the truth for real.
You might want to say I'm a lot. You got to understand.
We're trying to tell you the deal from my perspective. The J5 collectible wreck. Cause
you got to
keep it together and try.
You might want to say I'm a lot. But you got to understand.
We're more than meets the third eye, words fly, ripping from my
I need some understanding in this world between me and my girl. She wants the diamonds and the pearls and be a part of my world 24/7, but love don't pay the rent. So love me when I'm home and cherish the moment.
Cause some of you women are men's mirrors. I know some women who dodge balls like Ben Stiller. Please understand it's not to offend or seem bitter, but every queen need a king with her.
Yeah, Miss Thing, I don't know. Whenever I leave you ready to go. My mama told me about how it flow, but I didn't want to listen, but she told me so. Now if it ever came to the bank account, would you pack your things and get up and bounce? These the type of things that I be thinking about to all my other fellas.
You got to understand. You got to
speak the truth for real.
You might want to say I'm a lot. You got to understand.
We're trying to tell you the deal from my perspective. The J5 collectible rack. Cause
you got to
keep it together and try.
You might want to say I'm a lot. But you got to understand.
We're more than meets the third eye, words fly, ripping from my birds.
All times I try to do what the smartest guy do. It's cause I see the world from my artist's eye view. You live life, the next part is you die too. And there's no one on this earth this doesn't apply to.
Now that's true, cause every single day I live, I'm obligated just to say it like a T.I. is. And I ain't gonna talk about no cat whose decision is poor. Trust me, man, my hand is just as dirty as yours.
Either they like you or they hype you. It's a cycle, choices that we make in are vital. Cause in the blink of an eye, it can all go awry, and the next man will quickly take it tight.
Yeah, between me and myself and all of these things, understanding is a theme when we doing our thing. From the job to my queen and chasing my dream, the whole world needs a little bit of understanding. Yeah,
speak the truth for real.
You might want to say I'm a little
in the deal.
You got to understand.
We're trying to tell you the deal from my perspective. The J5 collectible wreck. Cause
you got to
keep it together and try.
You might want to say I'm a little, but you got to understand.
We're more than meets the third eye, words fly, ripping from a bird's eye view.
Ooh.
Yeah. We are back. It's the Sour Hour on the Brew Network. Thanks for hanging in, guys. Talking to Tim Clifford, co-owner.
Yes, sir.
He's been sitting here this whole time. Co-owner and head brewer of Sante Adarius Rustic Ales.
Jay, we're still friends. We're still friends.
We're getting a little loose in here. Tim's beers are really great, so, you know, we are indulging. But I guess we have a caller on the line, Scott?
Yeah, let's see. James?
Yes?
Yeah, you're in Connecticut.
That's right.
What is up?
I have a question about diacetyl.
All right.
All right.
So
you don't want it.
What's that?
You don't want it.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, you know, I've been brewing sour since probably 2011. I've been brewing since 95. So, you
nice.
Know, certainly I have the basics down.
Yeah, right.
Both me and my brother make a fair amount of sours in a variety of ways. Some small barrel aging, you know, a fair amount of just pitching wild yeast rose lair. In some cases, using bottle drags. In some cases, not. And both of us have a recurring but not consistent diacetyl problem.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it shows up in the secondary. Sometimes it shows up in the bottle. It usually dissipates over time, but not always. And sometimes it dissipates slightly but doesn't go away at all. So how to avoid it and then how to get rid of it once it shows up.
We're brothers because I have the same problem in my own brewery. And what tends to work for me is I can't say exactly why you're getting it. I have some ideas of things that what we're doing. But there's no doubt that, you know, we need to age our bottles for at least 6 weeks before we put them out because, yeah, raging diacetyl. Essentially, the bread will eat it up. Time almost always will work. That's my opinion.
Absolutely. I think it's also sour beer fermentation can be so finicky that, you know, you've been homebrewing since 1995. You take for granted the fact that a Saccharomyces fermentation is so vigorous and you're controlling the temperature in the first 24, 48, 72 hours to keep the acetaldehyde, the diacetyl in check, and then raising the temperature after that to make the reuptake a little bit faster. Sour beer doesn't really work that way because not only is nothing happening over a 24, 48, 72 hour period, but you're probably also not controlling the temperature. You're probably barrel aging it or it's in a carboy and you're not paying as close attention to the temperature. So as long as the culture is strong and active, especially the yeast in there are strong and active in competition with the bacteria, and you have, you know, you let it age, time is your friend, slightly warmer temperature, that's your friend, you know, it will age out. Brett is an amazing creature, and it won't clean up everything. You know, I don't like that sort of misconception about Brett, like, oh, just add Brett or just add more hops to fix a beer. That's never going to be the case, but, you know, Brett does keep working, and if you stick with it and you're patient, you know, good things will happen. And you know, you said six weeks for your bottle conditioning
minimum.
We do, and maybe it's more for a sour beer, or you would run into more problems with a sour beer. For us, it's 2 months because, you know, if we're basically starting a whole new fermentation in the bottle. So yep. We're expecting off flavors. We're expecting if there's PDO in there to be a rebloom of diacetyl, or maybe it'll even get ropey. And in that case, we're going to hold on to it for a lot longer. So we keep those bottles back for a long time. And it's a lot different from the Saccharomyces.
I've seen ropey beers. I've never made one yet. And I want to see one. I want one of those slimy fuckers.
We did a starter at the Rare Barrel, and that's now a full 30-barrel batch, and there's a ropey strain of PDO in it. In the propagation, it got ropey, and I was so excited. I was like, oh, look at this. It was like ectoplasm almost.
The blob.
I ran into the office. I was like, oh, you guys, you know, like everyone talks about ropey. Check this out. And it's just like the liquid never separates. It's just all connected. It's kind of like that drip of snot coming out of your nose and it just never quite breaks kind of thing.
It like hits the floor and it's still connected to your nose.
Yeah.
So is it like wanting to be in a car accident just so you can see what it feels like? Is that kind of the same thing? Because you don't want it, right? But you're saying I want it just to experience it. It's not a desirable, right?
Yeah, something like that. I wouldn't go as far as car accident.
Oh, a fender bender, you know, just to see what it feels like.
For sure. Yeah, well, maybe riding a roller coaster.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do I have that, do I have that wrong? I mean,
no,
it's
for sure. I mean, there's a professional curiosity.
Yeah, I want to see it. Okay. I want it to be totally honest with you. I want to put it in my mouth and eat it. I want to taste it. I want to see what that is.
It is viscous. Yeah, it's viscous. You know, it's not something. It's a sensory thing, so those are always hard to describe. And even when you do think you have a great descriptor for it, it's not a person-to-person thing. Like, oh, this person's totally going to get what I mean when I say, oh, it kind of tastes like a melted popsicle, but like right before it totally melts, something like that, you know. So there's always a little bit of confusion there.
Did we answer your question, James?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot, bro.
Good.
Love the show. Hoping to get out to California this winter and check out the Red Barrel.
Cool. Thank you for calling.
Awesome. Thanks, James. I'm glad that you asked that question, Scott. Did we answer your question? Because we just got off on a whole different
tangent. We did that to the last caller, and it's just... You got to check back in. You know, I want to make sure these guys are.
I was happy that he said yes, because I was like, oh, I actually have no idea.
Really?
Answer that question.
You guys didn't even scratch the surface.
We scratched it. We were getting deep in there. But one thing I wanted to do is just reset a little bit here and get into, you know, just who you are, Tim. You know, let's dive deep. Let's look inward and find out a little bit more about you. Where did you get your start? Where did this whole beer experience start? When did you realize beer was more than just, you know, something to get you drunk on a Saturday night?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
So I did my first home brewing batches about 18 years ago, and I really liked it. I was living in Charleston, South Carolina at the time, and I really loved it. But then, you know, I stuck with it for about a year, I'm sorry. But it didn't really, you know, life happened. And so went to college, graduate school, and out of graduate school, I needed a job. And coincidentally, a warehouse job was available, and it was for Williams Brewing. It's a homebrew supply company online. Mm-hmm. You know, williamsbrewing.com. Yeah, I still like them. and while there, I was just immersed in it. I mean, one of the things I had to do was make kits, and I was brewing all the time. And so that, writing for the Northwest Brewing News, it just got super immersed, and the obsession kicked in.
Yeah. Awesome. And then how did that translate into your start at Sante?
I think like all home brewers imagine or dream that they maybe will start a brewery one day. And I think I thought that too, but wasn't going to be real reality. Unfortunately, my mom died and she left me a little bit of money. And I was working at Seven Bridges. It's a organic collective in Santa Cruz. Please buy from them too. I'm part owner. Full disclosure. And so while there, I was just like, all right, let's go do this. Let's go see. So I had a little bit of money to burn.
Awesome.
Like literally a little bit.
Yeah. And so from those humble beginnings, how did you, you know, scratch together your equipment? Paint a little picture for people who have never been to Sante Adarius.
Yeah.
You know, I've been lucky to be there a few times and, you know, you have the beers, the tasting room is beautiful. And you walk back, and not to say it's not beautiful back there.
It's rustic.
It's that thing where it's like, you know, it's your baby, so you love it.
Right.
But it's very unique, so.
Yeah, it ain't pretty. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not impressing any other brewers with fancy brewing systems. But that's the way I was as a home brewer. I've never believed that you need to have fancy equipment to make good beer. So even as a home brewer, I never had temperature control. I just figured out different ways of doing things. So at the brewery, we have, I got this equipment from Alec at Uncommon Brewers in Santa Cruz, and he was expanding, going to like a 60-barrel system or something. Mm-hmm. And he had this little 7-barrel bullshit system for no money, and I was like, I'll take it.
There you go.
That's it. And so we batch barge. I mean, it's straight up homebrew. It's great.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, steam boiler. So yeah.
It's all repurposed equipment.
Yeah, none of it, with the exception of the conicals, none of it is technically brewing equipment. Yeah, and if I were looking to build a brewery now, I wouldn't be looking for brewery specific listings. I'd be looking for like pharmaceutical companies selling stainless or dairy companies selling stainless. I can do a lot with that stuff. We all can. So don't get too attached to the pretty stuff. That's my point.
Where did you find that stuff?
Well, I was lucky in that somebody else had done the legwork for that, another brewer. So I just got lucky in that this was available. But had I done it myself, I would have done something similar. But I mean, it's very, very hobbled together.
But you bought it as a complete system?
That's right, the hot side. Gotcha. Hot side was completely intact.
And you know, I should say while we're talking with Tim right now, we're also opening a second beer from Sante, which is the, and I don't hesitate to say this, world famous West Ashley. This is one, you know, recognized as one of the best sour beers out there right now. And we're lucky enough to have it. You know, Tim's Brewery is an hour and a half south of San Francisco.
That's about right.
So if you guys are in town and, you know, hopefully they have this beer, you got to get down there. I mean, even at the expense of a trip across the bay to the Rare Barrel, I'm saying you got to get down there and have this beer.
You could
beer.
Do both in one day.
And many people do, actually.
They do.
You know,
they
we
do.
See a lot of people who are like, oh, there's a bottle release at both in the same day. They're going to one first and then trekking over to the other. But that, and that's a lot of fun. But, you know, so many people love this beer, Tim, and we've gotten, you know, a lot of response from you coming on. You know, tell us a little bit about this beer in particular, maybe a little beginning to end on this. You know, there's a lot of homebrewers listening, a lot of pro brewers listening who have seen your success with this beer. Maybe walk us through how you make West Ashley.
How we make it, right. So in the beginning of the segment, we talked about Bernice, right? And we talked about the base beer for that, Anise. So I'm using the same base beer. So it's fundamentally, it's Bernice put into Pinot barrels with apricot. And we use puree. We use the, I always took Jamil's advice, and I like that Oregon puree stuff. It works great. So it's super safe. Very effective. So that's
those,
what we're doing.
Are those Pinot barrels freshly emptied or you're reusing
them? No, we're
them?
Reusing them. Okay. Yeah, all my stuff's neutral, and those are the same barrels we've started with. We've slowly added things. I'm not really looking for any wood character. It's an interesting, different conversation we could have about what barrel, what barrels impart. Because I get a lot of that. I read reviews, and it's like, I don't really get the barrel. It's like, yeah, you do. You just don't know what you're getting from the barrel.
Right, so, there's a lot of complex flavors there.
Yeah. Yeah,
but there's a lot of complex flavors in this beer. It's really great. It's got this vibrant apricot to it, and it's got this very. It's I'd say it's like a medium to medium plus acidity, and it just accents the apricot perfectly. And
when it came to be, it was a total accident. I was not working with fruit as a home brewer at all. It was just like we had one tank when we started, and I needed to make beer, and people wanted to buy it. So I was like, oh, let's put some fruit in there and see what happens. It was a total accident.
And how has you know, you developing your own sour cultures as a home brewer changed from then to what you're doing now? And maybe you could just describe that process a little bit.
Sure. It's changed very little, except for the fact that I have it. I have my culture is plated out at Giga Yeast, for example. So all you professional brewers, go talk to them and they'll give it to you, and that's fine. So the way I started was I'm not a scientist, I'm a historian, but I believe in the scientific method, you know. And so basically what I started doing was gathering all commercial strains, working with them, bottle dregs, and then as I found things that worked, as things didn't work, tossed it. If things worked, I kept working with it, and then slowly started realizing, okay, I could blend this stuff. So, my whatever is our house culture now is a conglomerate of several different commercial strains available of Brettanomyces and Lactobacillus, and then things that have ended up in there from bottles. And I don't make any. That's very true. I mean, one time Sean Hill was like, "You're using my yeast," and I was like, "Fuck yeah." Fuck yeah, I am. I've got some of that in there. You know, there's some of that in there. Yeah. So.
And how do you treat it over time? How do you maintain that culture? Is there a drift? You know, how are you maintaining versus accepting the drift and then blending?
Yeah. I think I do it very rudimentary, in a very rudimentary way. I have Erlenmeyer flasks. I use them the same way as I would with home and at home. And I have tin foil over the top. And I weekly to every 2 weeks make new starter wort. And it's honestly just the same. And so, and it's the same process. If it tastes good, and it continues to go on. And what we're finding is, even though slowly I've been trying to add other cultures to this culture, if you will, I want to keep that blend going. But what I'm finding is that even when I try to isolate things now, that character is so strong in the brewery that all these things are just kind of becoming one. So it's interesting.
So you're driving towards a house character, even if that's not you know, exactly what you intended.
Yeah, I mean, intention's an interesting thing. I mean,
you're right.
I'm writing, and I'm enjoying the ride.
Awesome.
Yeah, so,
well, there's two things now that Tim has said that has piqued my curiosity because I can't really ever recall hearing it. The first one is that the brewing water, how it sucks and he doesn't treat it. And now the second thing here is that he's not going for wood character, overtly. Not going for wood character, although in wood aging. So, Jay, when you make your Map of the Sun, your apricot sour, are you going for wood character?
Not on that beer. So,
really? Is this a more common thing than I think it is then?
Well, I would say no. I see a lot of virtue in a neutral barrel. And the reason I see virtue in that is because we can get a clear read on what our experiment is going to be with our yeast and bacteria, which is the main focus of what we're doing right now. Not that it's always going to be that way. You know, in 2 years, we may be focused on creating the perfect sour beer to put into a tequila barrel. So I'm going to order 50 tequila barrels and just make, you know, a bunch of different sour beers for those barrels. But, you know, for right now, I really want that neutral barrel so we can, you know, reap the rewards of all this hard work of our experimentation. And I like it because fermentation, I think, produces better flavor than any ingredient, any barrel, any recipe possibly could. And it's the most romantic, mysterious part of brewing. You know, at the Rare Barrel, I hate to say, we sort of seek to demystify it a little bit, not to dampen down the romanticism of blending or these wild yeasts and bacterias, but just to learn a little bit more. It's like, you know, reading Shakespeare and then talking about it in your English class also. You know, you can read it and then just let the interpretation sink in, or you can read it and try and analyze, all right, what was he really trying to say here, kind of thing. So, not to compare myself to Shakespeare, but
you guys have similar beards.
Similar beards? I could go a little pointier, I think.
That's true.
Yeah.
Terrence is on line one with a question about barrel care.
Terrence.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going good.
Great.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey, I was excited. It's my first time being able to listen on the show.
Brad.
Awesome. Thanks for tuning in. What's your question?
I had a question about at my brewery. We're thinking about getting into doing a little bit of barrel aging, and you guys talk about how you reuse your barrels. So, kind of, what is the best way to take care of your barrels when you get them, and kind of in between uses?
Great question. We do a lot of barrel ordering, and we go through a lot of barrels. I think our current cellar is probably like about 800 barrels deep. So we process a lot of barrels, and I got to say, barrel care is the most under-talked about, underrated part of making a sour beer, or really any barrel-aged beer, because, I mean, it's going to have the most flavor impact of any step along the way. It's like, hey, you're going to put a beer into this tank, but, yeah, maybe you'll clean it, maybe you won't. So it's very important. So just to go through that process a little bit, you know, you got to get a supplier you can trust. So call around other breweries and find out, you know, have they gotten good high quality barrels from the supplier? Sometimes you'll get a great price on a barrel, but it's unusable for beer. So you don't want to have to deal with that. Did you say where you're located, Terrence?
San Jose.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so you're local.
Yeah. You'll be fine. You have a lot of access to great barrels in the Bay in California. So that really shouldn't be a problem. So once you find a good supplier, you order the barrels you want, and then kind of depends, like what we were just talking about. If you want a neutral barrel, there's less of a rush to get it filled right away. If it's freshly emptied and you want that character, whether it's bourbon, whether it's wine, whatever it's going to be, you really want to start treating that barrel right away to get that flavor in your beer. So how you start to treat the barrel, let's say you want whatever's inside to get into your beer. What I usually do is I'll soak the heads of the barrels. So that way you're not putting any liquid inside of the barrel. So most of the leaks you're going to get are on the heads of the barrel. So basically put hot water on one head, soak it overnight. If it's not completely dry the next morning when you come back, that's a sealed side. Flip it over, try it on the other side, And then, you know, same thing. Come back the next day, see if there's still water there. If both are sealed, go ahead and fill it with beer. You might get some leaks along the staves, but they're much less common and a lot easier to fix, to be honest. Now, if you're not going to use the flavor of the barrel, what you're going to want to do is, I prefer the method of, you kind of have, so you have two options. You have a dry sulfur method, and you have a wet sulfur method. Dry sulfur is you're burning a sulfur stick inside of that barrel. It's not something you want to do in, just safety warning here, you don't want to do it in any type of spirit barrel because it'll light on fire and explode. So definitely don't do that.
You speak from experience?
No, but okay. It's, you know, it's happened in the brewing industry. It's like a really a serious thing. So definitely don't do that. If you're going from wine barrel, you know, you can light the sulfur in there, but what I don't like about that is that, sure, you might be preventing mold growth or, you know, other microbiological growth that will be unfavorable for your beer, but that barrel's sitting dry the whole time. So even when you come bring it back into production, you're still going to have to rehydrate it. So what I like to do is do wet sulfur. So that's basically fill the barrel up with water until it seals. So I'm doing cold water. Well, I start with hot water if it's really loose, then switch to cold water. Don't leave hot water in there overnight because overnight it'll drop to an area, a temperature range where mold growth will run rampant. So just do hot water rinses and then cold water. Don't ever leave a barrel with hot, you know, any type of hot moisture in there. Rinse it cold, fill it with cold water, wait till it seals. And then once it does seal, that's when I put in a pound of potassium maybe bisulfite and then a half pound of citric acid. That's our storage solution. A full barrel of water and then that pound of potassium maybe bisulfite and the citric acid. And so that's going to prevent mold growth for the next 6 months before you have to replace the liquid. But it's also when you bring it back and you're ready to fill it with beer, you can flip it upside down, dump it out, rinse it out, and you know everything will be sealed. This is not going to be a barrel that's going to be leaking. So anything to add to that, Tim? I just rambled for quite a bit.
I learned a lot, honestly, Jay. I'm hearing a lot of different, honestly, a lot of different winemaking techniques and the way in which they care for their barrels and which you've described. We don't do that at all, but that's...
What do you do?
Nothing.
So you get a brand new barrel in.
We get a brand new
Wood for your cellar. You got some fooders. How do you guys
boiling? We use boiling water. We'll run in the case of the fooders, we did essentially a CIP through it, and we had mold initially in those, and we ran CIP with boiling water, and then we fill it. And that's it. And we don't use any chemicals. Mm-hmm. I have a steam gun, so because I have a steam boiler, we use steam prior to filling. If sometimes we fill things that are just have bugs already, like we just I'm packaging West Ashley, and that day I'm adding West Ashley. What's the point? There's no point in changing the barrels. Mm-hmm. Just go with it. But as far as fixing it, I mean, yeah, I don't know how to do that. It's really cool. Yeah, I don't know how to do the sulfur thing. I don't like. We have a little bit of a farty thing going on with our culture anyway, and so sulfur. I just want to stay away from it.
Right. Yeah. You really got to rinse that sulfur solution out really well. Before you put beer in there. I mean, we go so far as I'm really sensitive to the, potassium metabisulfite to the point where I have to have this like huge hazmat style face gas mask on. If I'm adding that to the barrels,
yeah, shit's nasty.
And my test for, hey, is all this out of there and it's ready to put beer in there is we're rinsing it with water before we put beer in there. And I put my cup at the bottom and then take a sip.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not, you know, if I'm super sensitive to it, that's my test. I don't want anyone to be like, you know, perceiving any sulfur in any of our beers from the chemicals, basically. So,
yeah.
Hey, Terrence, you been down to Santa Darius yet?
You know, a few times. So I like that place.
Yeah, I would hope so. Quick jaunt down the 17 from San Jose.
Yeah. No, I love it. It's my favorite spot in the bay.
Well, listen to Jay about the upkeep of your barrels, Terrence. Don't listen to me.
Thanks for calling, dude. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Great question, Terrence. And, you know, like I said, you know, barrel prep is one of the more important things. It's kind of like one of the less sexy things about beer making, about sour beer making. But it's so critical. You know, you can't. You never put a beer into a tank that wasn't clean. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not as if we, like when I say we don't do anything, I mean, I've determined that that barrel is clean and that it's sealed. But outside of that, you know, that's not how I do it. But steam, again, will kill everything.
Right on. I think it's time for a break. So we'll be right back with Tim from Sante, and we'll open up another beer. How's that sound?
Please. Please.
Sounds great to Scott and I.
Yes.
And I know all the listeners are pretty jealous. So we'll be right back. It's the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to MoreBeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Drink to youth. for a walk.
That was the song or me?
I couldn't quite tell.
There you go. I've got a great voice. Everyone says so.
So is Tone is Tone Loc super white or are you super not?
That's an excellent question. We need a whole nother segment for that. I can't decide. But
I most like to do the wild thing. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. Keep going.
Tim, don't want to
be here. Keep going.
Tim, don't
talk. Bring it back.
We're good. I know them. I'm a little bit older than you guys, so I'm feeling kind of like I'm thinking about when I first heard this song. And
where were you?
High school. Yeah, it's kind of gross.
Dance?
No, MTV.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe on the
at
couch
home.
With an ex-girlfriend. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Not that I remember.
Yeah, not that I remember exactly where I heard it and what I was doing.
Awesome. We're back on the Sour Hour. We're with Tim Clifford, the co-owner and head brewer of Santa Adarius. I really want to talk to Tim more, but Scott insists that he needs to interrupt me right now for some reason.
Oh, that's right. Well, because I really wanted to tell you guys, even though you've both already started breweries, for those of you that haven't, and it's a dream of yours, the Brewers Association's Guide to Starting Your Own Brewery will help you plan and open a thriving, quality-oriented brewery. I know, Jay, you said you used a previous version of this book when starting your brewery. And it's
but this one's from Dick Cantwell, right?
Yes, of Elysian, and it's an essential tool. Dick's going to walk you through everything, financing and business plans and quality and distribution and just everything you need to know to start your brewery good. He'll walk you through planning and execution, and it's just a comprehensive guide. It's going to deliver you essential industry knowledge that you don't want to start a brewery without it. So check it out, the Brewers Association's Guide to Starting Your Own Brewery.
You know what's weird? I saw Dick at Levi's Stadium on Thanksgiving night against the Seahawks.
Seriously? Did you run into him?
I was in line for beer, and it was a long line. I had just gotten to the front, and then I saw him walk by, and I was like, oh. That's Dick Cantwell. It's like he's maybe met me like once or twice. He probably wouldn't recognize me in that unfamiliar atmosphere. But I was like, oh, I should go talk to. Wait, no, I'm pretty drunk.
Oh, you didn't even say hi?
No. Well, I would have, given up my space in line to go embarrass myself being drunk in front of a brewing legend who probably doesn't know who I am. So, but he makes amazing beers. Yeah,
incredible. Yeah.
really good stuff.
Yeah, why would he know who you are? You're only a GABF gold medal winner, and you're only making headlines from coast to coast. Why would he know who you are, right?
That's enough of that, Scott. No, he has no idea who I am.
All right, but, fine.
You know, he does write a great book on starting a brewery. Highly recommend you guys should all check it out.
Well, let's see if... hey, Daniel from New Jersey.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, cheers, good, man. Guys. Good. Do you want to start a brewery?
No.
No, you just want to keep homebrewing, huh?
Good answer.
Oh, yeah. I want to make it a hobby, not a job.
Fair enough. What's your question?
For the guys, I've got a 15-gallon barrel that I'm planning on making into a Saison Solera. And I had some questions about any suggestions on keeping a Solera going just inside the barrel. And my plan was to take the Saisons out, a portion at a time, and add fruit to it. And any kind of suggestions you guys had to on how to process the fruit, juices or whole fruit or what.
Interesting. We actually do. We have a fooder that we, in fact, we're having this beer right now, Cast 200, and we run a Solera in it. So I can tell you what we do. I'm not going to tell you that this is the gospel, but I can tell you what I do. Definitely want to take it out in portions. Otherwise, it's not a Solera. The way that we do it is it's a 660-gallon fooder, and we pull roughly a third of it out at a time, package it, and then add beer that we've already fermented, let's say in primary, to the back to the fooder. And it's always a different, in our case, it's always a different beer. I'm not trying to maintain the same recipe of the Saison. It's whatever. I want to see that change. I'm inviting change. That's the point of doing it. As a result, also, we don't add any more yeast. So once you've pitched once, you got to roll with it. As far as adding fruit, That's a really interesting question, and I wouldn't say that I'd recommend putting it in that barrel. I think that what I would do is I would take the Solera product, your Saison in this case, and take 5 gallons of it back to a carboy on top of your fruit, because otherwise you're just going to run into a fruit punch mess in the barrel, and it's going to defeat the purpose of keeping that thing going. So...
Yeah, my plan was to add it to the portion that I pulled out.
Yeah,
and kind of do like every quarter, do whatever seasonal fruits or products are available.
It sounds rad.
Where do you live?
New Jersey.
And you asked about the
fruits.
Send
us some bottles. That sounds pretty good.
I believe in pureeing fruits. I buy them pure already. Again, I'm from Oregon Fruit, already pureed. But if I were going and getting like local fruit, I would also have that blended down. I wouldn't use those whole pieces. They tend to float and they become mold.
I agree with that.
Magnets.
And not everyone does share our same viewpoint, but what I really like about it is it breaks down the fruit, exposes everything, large contact area. It does, sink to the bottom, like you were saying. And instead, you kind of never know, if you're putting in just whole fruit, maybe some slices or some quarters or something like that, you never know when it's fully in there. Like, is all the sugar being accessed? Is it done fermenting? Or, is there more in there? So I would definitely recommend just, like, macerating it. It doesn't have to be, like, a strictly, like, crazy consistent puree. But just, get at the sugars as much as you can. Get the stems and pits out, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks,
cool,
Daniel.
Thanks so much.
Yep. Thanks for the call, man.
Well, Tim, we are drinking Cast 200 right now. Anything you didn't get to mention about it in the response to that question?
Not really. I mean, I really like this beer. I teased myself earlier about the whole rustic term. I think the only beer that I make that really speaks to me about being kind of rustic and dirty is Cast 200. So I think it's a really fun project. I'm really excited about this next bottling that we'll be doing in that. We actually pulled, I said earlier, we pulled out a third of it each time. This last time we pulled out two thirds of it and added back fresh beer. And what's going on is very different. And
how has it been different so far?
Nuances, ultimately nuances. And I've been really surprised by that because, again, I'm making an effort to always put in, we're always putting in a different beer. It's not like, we make a lot of different base Saisons, and whatever we have on hand is what's going on in there. And so I find that to be interesting that it's what we were talking about earlier. The fermentation character is really what's driving the flavors. It's not that base beer really doesn't matter too much.
Awesome. So, yeah. I think we're going to get into some more questions, and I think a listener actually sent us some some of his homebrew sour beer, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask my favorite question to ask people who come on the show.
Oh, no.
Tim?
Yes?
What's the biggest mistake in sour beer making, in your opinion?
The biggest mistake? I think the biggest mistake is to think that it's as simple as just putting beer inside of a barrel and adding bugs. I think that's the level of arrogance. There's an arrogance to that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm not an arrogant man myself. I am a brewer. You know.
Oh, what are you trying to say?
What?
You want to go?
Not.
We can go right now.
We can. I mean, is that what's going to happen, Jay?
It's up to you.
Yeah, no. Oh, fuck. Yes.
It's good radio.
No, I think lately that's about the thing that's, you know, to me, that's kind of like, well, we're going to start a sour program. It's like, that never works. So be dedicated and be experimental. That's my answer. I'm really curious to see what your answer would be, Jay. Your same question. What's the biggest mistake?
On the last show of the Sour Hour, I'll give my answer. After hearing, 100 terrific sour brewers give their answer.
Yeah.
I will reveal my own.
There you go, episode 101.
That's a long tease.
Yeah, it is.
That's what they call it in the profession.
You keep them hanging on.
May I ask, my answer is obviously not technically driven. I have a feeling that your answer would be more technically driven. Like, you would be like, the biggest mistake that people are making, it has to do with my guess is process. That's my guess if I'm looking forward to the 101st show.
Well, if I'm at my 101st show and I'm 87 years old, I don't know if the math works out on that, but
I think it's like a decade, right? I mean, if we're doing one a month for 12 months, about,
something 10, like that. Yeah, yeah. Wow. That's, yeah.
Hey,
well, that's far away.
The BN's been around for 10 years. It's not inconceivable.
Real. Yeah, for sure. But, I think maybe it'd be more just if I'm about to retire at the age of 107, okay. It'd be more philosophical than technical.
Okay.
But, To add on to yours, I like that because, I love me some analogies when it comes to sour beer making.
Yes, sir.
And one of my favorites is the crock pot analogy to sour beer. So, I'm going to take my flagship beer and then put it into barrels, add some mix that I got from somewhere and I don't know what's going on with it, and I'm going to set it and forget it.
Yep.
Right there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not that simple. Yeah, sometimes it's brilliant. Sometimes it's just the best sour beer ever made. But at other times, it's like, why don't you just make 1 gallon of great sour beer first? Just proof of concept, If you're going to start a new business, or get a new investor or something, you're trying to prove that people actually like this or that this works. So
Why would you approach it any differently than making, let's say, your flagship beer?
Sure.
Your flagship beer, you're putting every bit of detail into every bit of thought. You have an idea of what that end result's going to be. And to think that the sour beer is some kind of like maybe accident that we'll just see what happens. You're going to see what happens, which is nothing. You're not going to like it, and you're, more importantly, your customers aren't going to like it.
And that's what we're trying to do on the show is just, maybe we're rambling sometimes. Maybe we're given different opinions, maybe even contradictory opinions, depending on the guest. You can do it a bunch of different ways,
yes.
But just think about it before you do it.
Be deliberate.
So hopefully you're listening to the show and just, not even taking this as gospel. I think you might have said that before, but, it's just like, just think about it.
There is no one way.
Right. If I tried to do, your playbook, play-by-play, it wouldn't work.
To do what you were doing, I'd be having to admit that I am not all that bright. So.
Well, I know that's not true.
Yeah.
Did you enter your beer at JBF?
No, we don't enter competitions.
Okay.
I'd be happy to talk about that if you guys want to.
Sure. Now everyone's curious.
Yeah, right. I'm extremely competitive as a person.
You want to go?
I really do want to go, Jay. Yes. I'm having to restrain myself. That's the point, right? And I get jealous. I mean, honestly, I get jealous. I was jealous, Jay, of you winning both gold medals at World Beer Cup and at GABF. You're my friend. Your beer is wonderful. And I want a fucking piece of that. But I know for me...
It.
I can... I'm going to get a piece. I understand. Yeah.
No, I meant... your beers are world class.
Yeah, but the problem is here with me, and I think you're we're different people. And in your case, like for me, If I didn't do well in competition, I would think that I suck. If I did well in competition, I would think I was great. And those are not, those are just, as when I'm running a business and trying to have a brewery, those are not things that I want to be having to play. It's just knowing myself personally.
Yeah,
I want the competition. I mean, of course I want that. I love it. It's fun. And I did a lot of competing as a home brewer, a lot. That being said, just so you know, I never made it second round of the national.
Really?
Yep, never made it second round. I got a 42 and didn't make it to the second.
In what category?
Belgian specialty. Yeah, 16E was always... 16E was always my category.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm very competitive. I think we all are in this room. And you tell me if you...
You want to go, Scott?
Yeah. Apparently there's going to be some going.
In the words of the great Bob Barker, I don't want a piece of you. I want the whole thing. Let's go. I hate losing, Tim,
yeah,
way more than I like winning. Mm. Way more. And so, I don't know if you... Do you relate to that?
I love to win. I mean, you know, we're going to go into like some child psychology stuff here. But yeah, my parents... I was very heavily rewarded when I brought home a medal or, like, you know, Tim did really well at school today kind of shit, like at a star. And they would really recognize that, and that was one of the ways I got my attention. I didn't get any attention otherwise. So we can delve into all that. I'll kick my feet up, and we can talk about it because I've done that.
But do you love your mother, Tim?
That's an interesting question. I do love my mother. Yeah.
All right, here's another interesting question. We have a ton of questions from the email. You guys can email me, scott@thebrewingnetwork.com, with any questions you have. And we have a big backlog, and forgive me, guys, because I'm giving precedence to the callers here. So we're just going to have to do a show, Jay, one of these days, where we just burn through a lot of these questions. But while we have Tim in the studio, since he was such a successful home brewer, I would like to get through at least a few.
42. I mean, come on.
I mean, that's
can't
good
be
stuff,
argued.
Tim, yeah.
It didn't make it to second round.
Well, that's all politics.
Yeah. Here's what it really demonstrates, right? Is that, I mean, I was doing that while I was living in Oakland and the greater Bay Area. What it demonstrates is what an incredibly talented group of homebrewers are in this region.
Oh,
I'm not going to say it's any better than any other region, but I knew, when people say, well, how did you know you were ready to go pro? It's like, well, fuck, man, I was competing against Nathan Smith and, you know, like, he might get gold, but I'd get silver, and that's pretty good. You know, and same thing with
absolutely.
Mike McDowell. And it's like, these guys are incredible brewers. And so, in many ways, I've told you this, my favorite beer is a homebrew. I remember it distinctly. We talked about it, Albies.
Justin Crossley Pale. Wait, what?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's my second favorite beer. But my favorite beer is Albies Goose.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you guys ended up brewing over at the brewery.
Yeah, I was working at the brewery, and we had our homebrew competition for our 50th batch, and Al Buck, who started East Coast Yeast, entered a goose, and it won the competition, so we got to brew it. That was, you
so
know,
good.
The first, one of the first five sour beers I had ever made as a professional, and I got to do the, you know, decoction mash, and it was like, I'm never doing this again. It was like pushing molasses up a sandy hill kind of thing, and it was just awful. But the beer at the end turned out great. But yeah, that was one of the best home brews I've ever had.
Yep.
Anyway, long segue.
Sorry.
To this.
Yeah, no problem. Well, now you guys know why we never get the questions on this show from the email. All right, here, this one's from Todd Bearden. He says, can you guys talk about harvesting yeast dregs from commercial beer bottles? He said, you guys talked about it on the first episode, maybe a little bit since, but never got into detail on how to do it. How many bottles do you need to harvest from for a typical starter? Things like that. Thank you. Love the show.
Okay, so Tim and I are having a little back and forth.
Both of us should probably weigh in on
who's
this.
Who's better to answer this? You know, as a pro brewer, I've done this less than five times where I'm taking bottle dregs out, but I'm going to take a little different tack to it than I see mostly, which is, you know, you do need to still use a sterile technique. You know, it's great if you can dip the bottle in sanitizer, if you can dip your cap opener in sanitizer once you open it, if you can... You know, spray the top with some alcohol, and you know, I should preface this, what I'm about to say, this is dangerous, so, you know, make sure you know what you're doing when you try something like this. But when the top has some alcohol on it, you should flame it, which basically means lighting it on fire, and that kills everything on the top, on the glass surface. Once that goes out, you can pour it, what is officially called decanting off the liquid on top, which basically means pour yourself a beer. So you pour off the beer on top, and then you swirl around the bottom of the bottle and pour it into a flask. and you keep that to eventually add some starter wort to. What I like to do, which is the little bit different part, is I like to take a little bit more of the beer with me than just, oh, I'm going to pour out all the beer to the, like, last centimeter and then swirl it up. I think there's some still working viable yeast in suspension in a lot of beers, even when it's cooled down, unless it's cooled down for a really long period of time. And I like having those guys active too, because I think there's some mutation, there's some selectivity where I want the people who are still floating around, I want those people to carry over to my next beer. So I do that. And then, you know, we don't have a sophisticated enough lab to, you know, plate out this yeast versus this yeast versus this yeast versus this bacteria. We're not at that point yet. I'd love to get there. But so we just grow up the mixed culture, and we usually do that at like a 1 to 10 inoculant to new wort ratio. So, you know, I'm going to put in, 100 milliliters of inoculant, in this case, the bottom of a bottle, and then top it off in a 2-liter Erlenmeyer, but only 1 liter, just up to 1 liter with wort. Leave a little room for re-fermentation. You know, once I add that 1 liter, I can put it into a 10-liter, which is probably suitable for, a 3-gallon carboy, something like that. And then, you know, you can just be off and running to whatever you need to go to. Just 1 to 10, you know, wait till it's done, taste it, test the pH, test the gravity, if you can do it without wasting too much. One hard thing is it's hard to measure the attenuation of a mixed culture or a yeast when you're in 1 liter, because pouring off enough for a hydrometer jar, that's like a lot of beer from your inoculation. So you want to keep a lot of that. So mostly go by taste at first, I would say, but then, you can just move it up at a 1 to 10 ratio. What do you think, Tim?
I mean, technique wise, I would agree with virtually everything that you're saying. I think what it point to me, it's not about how to, like, it's more like the interesting question to me is how much yeast should I add? And like, do we stress out the, you know, does these beers benefit from being stressed out, or do they benefit from having lots of yeast? And everybody, you know, just like anything else, you ask, you know, 3 homebrewers the same question, you'll get 3 different answers. My answer is I always want more yeast. You know, I want it to be a gluttonous party. That is totally different than, let's say, Vinny, who makes arguably some of the world's best sour beers, and he wants, as I understand it, I don't know him very well, mm-hmm. if at all, but as I understand it, he wants that stress, and there's something that comes special from that from him. I don't want that. I want mine to be fat and lazy, whatever.
For sure. And, you know, the process I was describing kind of goes back to a primary yeast propagation. So, you know, that's describing, I'm going to grow up this mixed culture to be a primary fermenter. Yes. Now, if we're talking about stress doesn't occur in a primary fermentation. Even if you're depriving a primary fermentation of oxygen and underpitching, they have access to every type of sugar they could possibly get. Yes. You know, it's totally different from if you're doing a Saccharomyces fermentation. It's depleting certain types of sugar. And then when you add your mixed culture in a secondary environment, you know, it's got limited resources when it comes to oxygen. It's got limited resources when it comes to type of sugar. It's competing against the existing yeasts. It's competing against alcohol. So there's all sorts of variables there. It just depends what you want. If you want more of that Brett character, you know, I'd go ahead and add it in a post-Saccharomyces way. If you want, you know, more guaranteed tartness, especially if you're just starting your sour culture, I do it as 100% fermentation, just, you know, on a small scale, just go in a gallon and use mixed cultures from a bottle drag. You know, if you can't make, I mean, I've said it before, if you can't make 1 gallon taste good, why make more than that?
Sure.
You know, or 1 liter, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And that's how I rely on my start on my cultures is taste, totally and by my own impression.
For sure.
The first part of Todd's email says that he has an Amazon tip for everybody that he wanted to pass along, and this is a good opportunity to tell everybody that if you would like to support the Brewing Network, a great way to do it is by clicking the Amazon link on our homepage and doing all of your shopping there as normal. A little percentage of it goes to us, courtesy of the fine folks at Amazon. Todd says, instead of going to your website each time and clicking on the Amazon link, I just copied that address and I use that for my Amazon bookmark. So anytime I click on that to go to Amazon and shop, it uses your link and I can support the BN. I've spent thousands of dollars on Amazon over the past year and I hope that it helps because I love what you guys do and I've learned a lot from all the BN shows. Todd, it does help, and anybody else out there that wants to help, that is a great way to do it. And that allows me also to launch into this brief bit about other shows on the Brewing Network, which if you like this show, you will definitely love Dr. Homebrew and Brewing with Style and Brew Strong and, of course, the flagship show, The Session, on Monday nights. All of the shows are their own animal, and they will be great for your beer listening pleasure if you like this show.
What was the last show?
What did I say? The Session?
Is it about Session
wrong?
Beer? Or?
I've
never heard the program.
Yeah, I think so. I kind of tune out when I'm in the studio most of the time. You know, I'm just here for a paycheck, basically. I'm just mailing it in.
Yeah, you've checked out.
Okay, here's what I want to do. I want to ask one more question from the email, and while you guys are answering it, I'm going to pour us some of the Yeast Geek. Send us some homebrewed lambic. It's been sitting in our walk-in, actually, and one of our staff members accidentally opened it, accidentally in quotes. He said it was really, really excellent. So I'm excited to try it, and we're going to get him on the line while we do it. So while you guys are answering Andrew Siliski's questions, forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that, but he says, I have a few questions about sour techniques. The first one is, should I age in a carboy with oak cubes or age in a barrel?
Well, I'll give my, as an unexperienced home brewer, I'll give my opinion on this from a pro brewer's perspective. I would definitely do the carboy with oak cubes, because if you want a slight oak flavor, you know, the cubes are a great way to go. I'm not sure how many to add in like a 5 gallon barrel. I'm sure you could look that up online, but I think for a home brewer on a small scale, a lot of home brewers get, we were just talking to someone earlier who had a 15 gallon barrel who was asking about the Saison Solera.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable with a 15-gallon barrel because I think it's just too much barrel contact with the beer. It's a lot of oxygen. It's a lot of oak flavor. You're probably buying it new. It's not like there's a great market for used 15 to 30-gallon oak barrels. So I'm a big fan of glass carboys. You know, a little oxygen will get in through the top depending on your closure, but... You know, the oak cubes is going to give you your oak flavor. It's also a great way to carry over yeast and bacteria from batch to batch. You know, not only will they live deep inside of the oak, they'll eat the sugars that the oak provides, but also it's a great place for yeast to settle on, just like the bottom of a carboy. It's surface in there. And, you know, that'll be if you can just take the cubes out and put them into the next batch, it's a great way to inoculate your next batch.
Yeah. I that's what I would use the cubes for. And I would agree. I mean, if you can get a barrel, do a barrel, man. That's your best bet.
Are sexy.
They are sexy, and like Jay says, you know, I mean, a 15 gallon barrel or one of those 5 gallon barrels, you know, put that beer in it and then the next day take it out. that's about what you're going to need, that kind of contact time. So, but the chips themselves or the cubes, in my opinion, are inoculators. That's why you would do that. I'm not crazy about wood character, even though I do a lot of aging in wood.
Sure.
There's subtle nuances that I want from that, and they're not the taste of wood.
You have to separate vessel from flavor.
Right.
And they're two different things,
right.
You know?
That's right. It's a wonderful vessel for making beer.
Sure. I mean, and if you want more flavor, just add a spiral or something,
sure.
Or cubes.
Sure.
All right. There were other questions on Andrew's email, but yeah, again, forgive me, Andrew. I'm going to move on, and we'll do a Q&A show, Jay. I think
for sure.
I think we're due for one. But in the meantime, we have the brewer of the beer that is in front of us on the line, Yeast Geek.
How's it going?
Hey.
Hey.
Mr. Geek. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Where are you at?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland. All right. So we have poured the first beer. Describe it for us.
First beer, basically the pull out of the barrel, which is a Solera style. It's a gallon barrel from Woodinville Whiskey that had a couple beers in it before it. And the recipe is basically 30% Pilsner, 30% Golden Promise, 30% white wheat and 10% midnight wheat. And to ferment it, I used USO5 and some dregs from a bunch of sour beers that we had a little tasting at my house with. So a little Cantillon, a little Almanac, Cascade, Anchorage, quite a bit of stuff in there.
Nice. And how did you treat the dregs over time? You know, you're obviously you're tasting these beers and, you know, you take the bottom of the bottle and then you're pouring them into what kind of container? Are you adding any wort or beer to it over time?
I basically just took for this barrel, I took a Erlenmeyer flask with just some sterile wort. I did some canning. So I took some sterile wort, put it in the Erlenmeyer flask and then dumped all the dregs in there. Let it go to town for a couple of weeks, and then when I was ready to rack the beer into the barrel, I pitched the dregs at the same time.
Awesome. I think that's a pretty good technique.
That'll work.
So are we doing some tasting notes right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Some feedback?
Yeah.
What do you think, Tim?
I think it's, what I like about it is that it belies this color, and what I like about it, it's really very approachable. It's a great level of sourness. It's not overly done. No acetic. It's pretty damn good, man. Good work. Dark sours are a trip, and you've done a really good job with it. So I like it.
And let's also not be afraid to troubleshoot too. This is really an excellent beer, but I don't want to shy away from even nitpicking the smallest thing, because the goal of the show really, as I've stated in the past, is to get as close to commercial quality sour beer as possible as a home brewer. So even if you are detecting slight problems, feel free to nitpick and yeast geek, make a mark on the feelings calendar if you have to.
Well, I'm an extremely encouraging. I've worked in the home brew industry for a long time. I think it's. I will tell you the truth. That's not a problem.
Right.
But ultimately, at the end of the day, I want to tell you whether I like it or not, whether I want another sip and whether I want more, and I would want more of this.
Me
so
too.
That's the best thing I can tell you.
Yeah, it's like, do you want another sip? Do you want another glass?
Yeah.
This is the two things I evaluate a beer by. And I'll just go ahead and kill the suspense. I say yes and yes.
Yeah.
When I first smelled the beer, I had a little concern that I have to preface this with saying I feel like I'm oversensitive to diacetyl sometimes. I've said this before on the show, but I'm really bad at other off flavor pickups. But diacetyl, I think I can dig out of places where not a lot of people find it. Now this, it was like, man, I don't know if I get strictly diacetyl in this, but then once you said it was in a whiskey barrel, I was like, okay, yep. that makes total sense.
Vanilla.
Because we were just talking. I was talking with my co-founder, Alex. It was either earlier today or the day before. We have a sour beer in bourbon and whiskey barrels. And it's like, yeah, is there diacetyl in this? We had this little discussion of like, no, I don't think it's like that, because it's like kind of the character of the barrel. It's got this caramelization of wood almost in the char. But it's on such a low level that it's really nice. And so once I understood that I was in a whiskey barrel, I was like, okay, that makes total sense now. I agree with Tim. The acidity is right on point. I'm surprised at the color from 10% midnight wheat. I don't know midnight wheat that well, but it seems like a pretty nice dark, like a nice almost oud brun level color to it from that midnight wheat. But it seems like a great recipe. And yeah, I mean, I really also like the way you treated the dregs over time. So it's a job well done, and I'm glad that we could have you on and you're explaining this so people will know sour beer by a home brewer can be done not only well but very well. I mean,
extremely well.
There are more challenges for home brewers than pro brewers when it comes to sour beer, because it's such an expensive process. But this is very well done, Yeast Geek.
Thank you.
Good job, Yeast Geek.
No, I just
was interesting. Is this you mentioned diacetyl? This first one, when I bottled it, went through a sick phase. Like as soon as it got bottled, so like the first couple bottles that I opened were just sludge. So I was wondering if maybe that might be what you're detecting. Or
do you have any more of those bottles when you send me one? I want to see it.
It's less of a mouth. So when I think of sick, I think of mouthfeel, because it's more of like a slick mouthfeel with the complex carbohydrates that are formed during the sickness phase. But with diacetyl, I think it's a totally different thing. When it comes to that, it's just such a, to me, such a distinct compound. And like I said, it's not like I get, you know, I'm an expert taster and I can get all these other things well. It's just this one thing that I like really pick out. And this was somewhat similar, but not from the mouthfeel. I think it's more from like this caramelization kind of whiskey flavor where it's like, it's to me, the fact that you said it was the barrel just completely reconciled it in my mind.
Me too. And that's what I like, what I thought about it was, oh, it's a whiskey barrel. All those vanillins to me, which are really easy, that the combination of that with some dark malt, I can see where that could be perceived as buttery.
All right. So I think Scotch Asportus beer number two, Yeast Geek, what can you tell us a little bit about this one?
Yeah. So basically what I did for the second one is I just like the first one, what I did is I took out 3 gallons of from beer and bottled basically a case of bottles for the first one. And then I replaced it with a much lighter beer. This was kind of one of my first sour projects. So what I wanted from sour beer, I didn't really know at the time. And I kind of wanted a lighter, more mellow beer. This thing's almost 8%, the first one. So what I replaced it with was basically, 1 pound of wheat DME per 1 gallon of water, for 4 gallons, and then just fermented out with USO5 and then refilled the barrel with that. Left it in there for another 6 months and then pulled it out, and this is the number two.
DME?
Yep, just used dry malt extract.
Interesting.
So I do perceive
there's a lot of diacetyl
in the second one. Yeah, the first one is like, it's like 1%. It's there, but it's barely perceptible. Very enjoyable beer. I get it pronounced, especially once you swallow it on the second beer.
Yeah, it takes a little while for it to kick in, but it's definitely there. Yeah.
It's interesting because I actually don't get diacetyl in this, but I do get, and this is not going to be helpful at all, but it's the only way I can describe it. From my old job, my old boss, Tyler King from the brewery, homebrewers would bring their beers in, and there's just this thing where it's like, he just said, you know what? I don't know, but this just tastes like homebrew to me. And there's this off flavor that I've never been able to put my finger on, where it's just not as vigorous of a fermentation, you know, not as much yeast, not as much oxygen, whatever it is, the difference between a professional beer and a homebrewed beer, the common difference, I would say, I get that in this a little bit, but I did not get it all in the first one.
Yeah.
The first one was, if that was a commercial beer, I'd be like, I'm happy I bought this. This one, and it's not even pronounced in this one, it's just like, it's seconds later after it just lingers on my tongue, right, where it's something that lingers. But to me, it's not diacetyl, but it may, you know.
How old is this beer in the bottle?
Number two has been in the bottle for about a month. It was in the barrel for 6 months, been bottled for about a month.
That's it.
Number one has been bottled for about 7 months.
Yeah. That's the problem. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, I would point to that 100%.
No, that's it.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. Yeah, we have this another month,
young.
2 months. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Very young.
Yeah. I mean,
wait, did we get
not
that
about
right
the overall?
Didn't you say that number two was
all DME?
The first sour beer you had made?
No, number two was the second one. Number one was the first 3 gallons I pulled from the barrel.
All of this was his first.
Number two was the second 3 gallons of sour beer making.
Okay, I understand now.
Is that right? All of this is your first foray into sour beer making?
This was my first project. I've done, you know, in that year that this has been going on, I've done a lot of stuff since then.
Okay. Yeah, if we're having issues with the beer in other ways, maybe those things can't be fixed. But if we're talking purely about diacetyl, which you and I are smart to identify, and Jay...
Yeah, what's going on?
Not
then?
So much. But let's say that it is really there, because it is.
It's there.
I want you to taste this beer now, and then I want you to come back to it in a month from now, and I want you to come back to it in 2 months from now. Save that many bottles so you can do that, so you can see what will change, and that will go away.
Yeah, especially the part that they're misidentifying as diacetyl.
Yeah.
So is there just enough... I'm sorry, did you say are you bottle conditioning this? Did you say you pitch into the bottle?
Yeah.
It has to be.
Okay, so, right. So then the time will... the yeast will just do its job over time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the... If I can dial in, I'm just kind of echoing what what you were saying, Jay, which is I do notice a through line, like with Roberto's beers from a couple of months ago, from beers we've had at Winter Brews Fest at Tasty's Tasting Room,
right.
and homebrewed sour beers that I've had. I've had very good examples. I've had a lot of not very good examples, but there just is sort of a gap that I've never really had that really bright, flawless. Mm-hmm. Sour beer from a home brewer, like the West Ashley, is flawless. Like it does not matter how hard you try, you're not going to find anything to complain about
bullshit.
That beer. No, it's true. I don't care what you say; it's true. I'm an objective source, and I'm on the radio, and I say it so. But that's what I want this show to do. I want to narrow, get rid of that gap, and I'm totally down with that.
I mean, but I gotta say, Yeast Cake's first beer.
It's
like that for me. Yeah. That's golden. That's fine. That's a commercial level beer, and it's a lot better than a lot of commercial beers.
Yeah,
it's a lot better than a lot of the beers out there.
It is, and of course, I'm using as my commercial examples for sours the best sour beers in the world.
We are spoiled.
Like, you know, Map of the Sun and West Ashley and Cantillon Fufun. Those are the apricot sour beers that are. You will not find on another planet.
But they're 10 feet away from us.
Right, I know, and we're just so damn spoiled, man. So Yeast Geek, I mean, I'm talking, your beer is 98%
there. Yeah, we're nitpicking.
And it is better than most commercial sour beer. It is.
More importantly, I mean, not to belabor the point, but again, use this as a, here's the learning to me is it's about the fermentation. Jay talked about that earlier. It's about fermentation. Fermentation is that's the sexy part. That's the great part. That's the fun part. And this bottle, watch it, taste it, and you'll see it change.
Cool. Is there one more beer you sent us, Yeast Geek?
I think you just sent two bottles of each of those.
Yeah.
There we go. Oh, okay.
I have some stuff that I'd love to send you in the future, but it's not anywhere near ready yet.
I have an interesting question.
Yeah.
For Yeast Geek. You called this a lambic.
I don't know. I guess it depends on who you ask. I mean, there's bit of different, you know, flora in there. Mm-hmm. So I think if you look at the definition of lambic, probably not, but it's the same thing, really. I mean, you're using, you know, the same bacteria and yeast. So to me, what's the difference, you know?
Okay. All right, mate,
I feel a rant coming on.
I'm gonna give a rant, and it's not about you, Yeast Geek, because clearly we're very close. It's really about presentation, and this is just 2 cents. Why not? I'm just gonna go and do this. You know, it's kind of like, well, I get a lot of beers from homebrewers, and they're always telling me they give it to me, and as they're handing it to me, it's what's wrong with this, or what can I do different, as opposed to just give it to me and let me taste it, and I'll let you know. If I like it or not, then we can delve into it. But it's about presentation. So my issue with it being called a lambic, had you called this an old brune, or more importantly, maybe some kind of a Flanders red, I would have been less critical from even as soon as it was poured. Scott was pouring it. I was like, it's not a lambic. So it's just 2 cents about presentation when you do decide to go pro, because you will.
Yeah.
It'll happen. That's my 2 cents.
Appreciate it.
Make sure when you do, Yeast Geek, that you use the Brewers Association's Guide to Starting Your Own Brewery.
There you go. Written by Dick Cantwell, who I was too afraid to talk to.
All right. Anything else for these guys, Yeast Geek, before I wrap up our show, because we're way over time as usual?
Just two quick things. One, you know, if anybody wants to see what else I'm doing with beer, they can follow me on Instagram at Yeast Geek. And then I would love to see you guys get Trevor from Degard on. That'd be awesome.
Ooh, I just had some Degard beers.
Do you know Trevor?
No, I don't know Trevor. I don't know any of the guys from Degard, but
he's a really great guy.
The beers were really good.
Fantastic.
Really, like, yeah.
And he's doing some weird shit. So.
I do want to talk to them, for sure.
Okay, for sure. We'll keep it in mind. Hey, thanks for sending these beers out to us. Let me know when you got those other ones ready for us. Yeah.
Thanks.
Sure. Thank you.
Yep, later.
Awesome.
Woo! Sour hour and a half.
Oh.
Yeah, that's how we roll, right?
Yeah.
So it's been a long night. The weather has not set in, thankfully, so there's easily time for another beer.
Yeah.
But I got to thank our guest tonight, Tim Clifford.
Tim,
I had a great
so
time.
Much for coming here, man.
Thank you.
Thanks
guys.
For bringing those
co-owner,
beers.
Co owner, head brewer, Santa Adair's Rustic Ales.
Thank you for having me.
There's some people outside drinking some beers. They look like they're happy. We should join them soon.
Those are some good-looking people, by the way.
Yeah, you guys roll with beautiful women.
Yeah, we
I'm
have beautiful
you.
Beautiful people hang around the Rare Barrel and Santa Adair.
No,
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, this industry used to be a sausage fest, and now there's a lot of good-looking women.
Yes,
chicks dig sour beer and
they do.
Good beer.
This is a fact.
So hopefully you keep listening to this show. You'll get the chicks too. This has been the Sour Hour on the Brewing Network.
Network.